Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing sankirtana in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nama, for by this process you will be able to deliver all fallen souls. What were the instructions of Mahaprabhu's guru? To dance and chant, assembly of devotees, and go out and distribute. Very good. Do you remember that? What was the first one? No, first one. Dance. Next. Chant. You can see. Chant. With where? Bhakti Sangha. With the devotees and Sankirtan to perform congregational chanting. Krishna Nama Upadeshi. Upadeshi is instruct. Instruct everyone. And Sarva Jana. Sarva means everyone. Jana is people. Okay. Now, it's really nice, all of Prabhupada's purports are wonderful, but it's just really nice that in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is going to talk about somebody who we were just meditating on 2 days ago. That was a nice continuation. Who do you think that's going to be? Well, not exactly. Prahlad, yes. Purport. It is another ambition of the spiritual master to see his disciples not only chant, dance, and follow the regulative principles, but also preach the Sankirtan movement to others in order to deliver them. For the Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principle that one should become as perfect as possible in devotional service oneself. I like that, as perfect as possible. And also preach the cult for others' benefit. There are two classes of unalloyed devotees, namely Gostiyanandis and Bhajanandis. Bhajanandis refer to one who is satisfied to cultivate devotional service for himself. And Gostiyanandis is one who is not satisfied simply to become perfect himself, but wants to see others also take advantage of the holy name of the Lord and advance in spiritual life. The outstanding example is Prahlad. Maybe you listen to the beginning. The outstanding example is Prahlad Maharaj. Very nice. They're sleeping. When he was offered a benediction by Lord Nisingadev, Prahlad Maharaj said, Naivo dvije para durajaya vaitaranyas twadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta soche tato vimukta chetasa indriyarta mayastukaya baram udvahato vimudan. My dear Lord, I have no problems. Just imagine, Krishna comes to you. What would you like? And you say, I have no problems. Yeah, okay. My dear Lord, I have no problems. Actually, most of us, we have a list, huh? Like you, I don't know what it's like in this country, but in America, if you go shopping around Christmas time, you see in some shops there's some statue of Santa Claus, and in his hands there's this long, 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 long list. My dear Lord, I have no problems. Actually, in this, most conditioned souls, we have our top problems, and as soon as those get solved, then something else moves to the top of the list. Have you ever noticed that? You're thinking, if I could just solve these problems, and I'd be happy. And somehow you solve those problems, and then there's other problems. It's quite interesting. But Prahlad Maharaj said, I have no problems. Did Prahlad Maharaj have no problems? My goodness. He really had problems. I mean, anybody here have someone trying to kill you? Anybody here? I mean, actually, not like you're just hallucinating. But actually, putting you under the feet of mad elephants, throwing you in the middle of a fire, giving you poison. Anybody? If that was happening to you, would you say you had no problems? He said, I have no problems. And want no benediction from you, because I am quite satisfied to chant your holy name. This is sufficient for me, because whenever I chant, I immediately merge in an ocean of transcendental bliss. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying, I'm already experiencing an ocean of spiritual happiness just by chanting. So therefore, I don't need anything else. I only lament to see others bereft of your love. They are rotting in material activities for transient material pleasure and spoiling their lives, toiling all day and night simply for sense gratification with no attachment for love of Godhead. I am simply lamenting for them and devising various plans to deliver them from the clutches of Maya. Bhagavatam 7, 9:43. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati explains in his Anubhasya, quote, a person who has attracted the attention of the spiritual master by a sincere service likes to dance and chant with similarly developed Krishna-conscious devotees. So here again, this is referring to the previous verse, that the way to please the guru is to chant and dance with similarly developed Krishna-conscious devotees. So that attracts the attention of the spiritual master. That's what we're supposed to be doing, yes? Don't try to see God act in such a way that he will see you. We're trying to attract the attention of Guru and Krishna. The spiritual master authorizes such a devotee to deliver fallen souls in all parts of the world. Those who are not advanced prefer to chant the Hare Krishna mantra in a solitary place, unquote. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati is saying that the preachers are on a higher level. Such activities constitute, in the language of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, a type of cheating process in the sense that they imitate the activities of exalted personalities like Haridas Thakur. So he's saying that generally people who just say, I'm not going to preach, I'm just going to chant and take care of myself, are just imitators, generally. They're not actually advanced. One should not attempt to imitate such exalted devotees. Rather, everyone should endeavor to preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all parts of the world and thus become successful in spiritual life. So this is interesting because first it seems that preaching is the result of being successful. It's the result of being enlivened in chanting and dancing with the devotees. That by chanting and dancing with the devotees, you get the acknowledgement of the guru. And by that success, you become enlivened to preach. And here again, it says something kind of opposite. Everyone should endeavor to preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all parts of the world and thus become successful in spiritual life. That preaching to others is the means for one's personal success. So it's an expression of spiritual purity and it's a means to spiritual purity. By the way, everything we do in bhakti is like that. Everything. Just like in the material relationships, ordinary relationships, man brings the woman he loves flowers. So why? He does that to create love that's not yet there, and he does that to express love that's already there. Both. It expresses an existing relationship and it builds a relationship. So everything we're doing is like that. When we offer flowers to the Lord, we offer incense, when we chant the Lord's holy name, it expresses what's already there and it increases our relationship as well. So both an expression and a creation of. One who is not very expert in preaching may chant in a secluded place, avoiding bad association. Now this is interesting. So first Prabhupada's saying that if you go to chant in a secluded place, you're probably a cheater and that you'll become advanced by preaching. But then he says, you know, if you think you're not advanced enough to preach, okay, go chant in a secluded place. But for one who is actually advanced, preaching and meeting people who are not engaged in devotional service are not disadvantages. So here Prabhupada's speaking to the fear that somebody will have, well, if I go and preach, I'll become contaminated. And he says, okay, if you think like that, you can chant alone. But if you're actually strong in Krishna consciousness, you won't get disadvantaged. He says, a devotee gives the non-devotees his association, but is not affected by their misbehavior. So this is an important guide, of course, for preaching, as Prabhupada would say. You catch the big fish, but you don't get wet. So our preaching should be such that others are benefited by our association and we're not degraded by their association. If we're degraded by their association, there's something, we're doing something wrong, either our basic activities are off, like here it's saying first chant and dance in the association of devotees and then go preach. So either we don't have our own strength. Right? The other day I gave a multimedia presentation on my laptop. Before that, I met one devotee at Soho who was showing me some things he's creating for our books on the, he's creating it on a tablet, turning our books from printed books to a tablet. And he said, "Do you have a computer here?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, could I use it to charge my tablet? It doesn't have enough battery." And I said, "Well, I don't think I should do that because I'm going to give a presentation. And when I give a presentation," I said, "I didn't bring my cord. When I give a presentation, I have two batteries in my computer." I said, "It fully drains one battery and partially drains the other. So I have to make sure I have enough battery life in my computer." So when we're going to preach Krishna consciousness, we have to have enough battery life in our computer. And you can't use your computer battery, right, to charge others. You can't have others draining your life. You've got to be strong in and of yourself. If you're weak, then others will be able to drain your energy. Thus, by the activities of a pure devotee, even those who are bereft of love of Godhead get a chance to become devotees of the Lord one day. So that's also nice. So all preaching doesn't have to be immediate total results. We can be giving people a chance to become devotees one day. So we can be sowing seeds and starting people in their Krishna consciousness. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur advises that when discussed the verse in Srimad Bhagavatam beginning Naitat Samacharyat Jatu Manasapi Hi Anishvara 10:33:30, that particular verse is in relationship to the Rasalila, where Maharaj Brihat asks how Krishna can be dancing with the wives of others. And Sukadeva Goswami says, you cannot imitate the activities of the great controllers. So he's giving us first this admonishment. Be careful that in your preaching, you keep yourself safe. That you have your own strength and keep yourself safe. So that's admonishment here. And the following verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.5.5, which seems to be saying quite something different. Ana shaktasya vishayan yattartam upayunjita nirbanda krishna sambande yuktivaira gimuchite. What does that verse mean? Very famous verse. Ana shaktasya vishayan yattartam upayunjita nirbanda krishna sambande yuktivaira gimuchite. Generally we quote this last line. Nirbanda krishna sambande yuktivairagyam uchite. It's a very often quoted verse, and it's sort of one of the founding pillars of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Yes, thank you very much, Shantamani. Yes, one should utilize everything in the service of the Lord, and that is real renunciation. Then Prabhupada puts these together and says, one should not imitate the activities of great personalities. One should be detached from material enjoyment and should accept everything in connection with Krishna's service. So both things. Use everything in Krishna's service. Preach widely, but don't imitate someone who's above you. There's a limit. Know your limit as to what you can do and be safe. My dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing sankirtan in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nama, for by this process you will be able to deliver all fallen souls. So this, of course, is the instruction to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his guru. And this instruction gives us the key as to what is the Vrindavan atmosphere. What is the essence of the Vrindavan mood? What is the essence of Vrindavan? Because Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. Why is he coming? What are his purposes? Yeah? Sure, let's go internal. What Radharani sees in him, yes? What happiness she feels, yes, when she experiences his love, and she tastes the sweetness. What is this taste? So Mahaprabhu is Krishna wanting to understand what is the sweetness and happiness of Srimati Radharani. What is the sweetness and happiness of the Vrindavan mood from the position of the ashraya instead of the vishaya, from the point of view of the devotee? And what happens when he wants to experience this essence? He does what? He distributes it. He preaches. And he preaches not just to other already advanced devotees, but he preaches to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who's a Mayavadi or Brahmavadi jnani. He preaches to the Mayavadis in Varanasi. In fact, this chapter is Mahaprabhu doing precisely that. He's preaching to the ordinary sense gratifiers. He's giving Krishna consciousness to everyone. So we have as our goal, our prayojana in our Hare Krishna movement, to enter into Vrindavan. Yes? 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 At least theoretically, is that what everybody wants to do? That's why we're all here? That's why we've sacrificed. I assume everyone here has made some sort of sacrifice to be here. Yes? Did you leave your families? Maybe you moved to another country. You put on clothes that were rather strange for the UK. At least most of us here are wearing rather odd clothes for the UK. And we put some mark on our head that's a little strange in London. And we go out publicly singing and dancing. That's a sacrifice, isn't it? Yes? Waking up early every morning and spending hours chanting and only eating food that's offered to Krishna and so many things. This is all sad. What are we doing it for? What's our purpose? We want to enter into Vrindavan. So it'd be helpful to know what is the essence of Vrindavan. What is it that makes Vrindavan Vrindavan? What's the difference? You know, a lot of the Hindus, they think Vaikuntha and heaven are the same. Or just like in so many religions, they're planning on going to heaven. When I was very new in the Hare Krishna movement, I mean, I'm still very new, but when I was very, very, very new, so I was out on book distribution. I mean, seriously, like maybe 3 days living in the ashram. And I remember meeting these people at the airport. I said, so what's your goal? They were preaching to me, you know, they were coming to me. And you can imagine what they were preaching to me. You have to surrender to Jesus and like that. And I said, so what's your goal? And they were, our goal is heaven. And I said, oh, that's nice. What will you do there? We'll do the same thing we're doing now. I said, oh, really? Will you watch TV and go to McDonald's? And then they kind of got a stunned look on their face and walked away. But generally, people think about, which, by the way, that interchange really gave me faith in Krishna consciousness. But most people's idea of heaven is simply more sense gratification, yes? And in fact, Swarga is like that. Swarga is a nice place. In fact, you know, in Swarga, nobody sweats. You know that? There's no perspiration. So they don't have any sports stores that advertise quick, dry clothing. You know that, right? They sell clothing for athletes, where it wicks away your perspiration very quickly. You're not drowning in your perspiration. There's a whole industry. Did you know that? There's a whole industry for athletes to make clothing that where you're not drowning in your perspiration when you're working out. But they don't have stores like that in the heavenly planets because nobody sweats. And nobody's clothes get dirty. They don't have any washing powder companies, washing machine companies, clotheslines, because their clothes don't get dirty. This was exhibited when Damayanti she had fallen in love with King Nala. But still, she had a swayamvar. I don't know why. Why didn't she just marry the man she loved? Anyway, she had a swayamvar. And she was so qualified that the demigods also wanted to marry her, but they knew that she was in love with Nala. The whole thing is so silly. If you know the woman's in love with another man, why do you want to marry her? By trickery. Conditioned souls are so silly. Anyway, so these demigods, they disguised themselves as Nala. And they came to the swayamvar, and when she came to her swayamvar, there were four Nalas in front of her. One was Indra, one was Varuna, I forget who the other one was. And she's like, how am I going to figure out who's the man I really love? And she saw who's sweating. So the demigods, they don't sweat, their clothes don't get dirty, their feet don't touch the ground. You know that, yes? Demigods, their feet don't touch the ground. But when we read about Vrindavan, Krishna's feet are touching the ground. We read about Krishna's leaving his footprints everywhere. And we read that Krishna is sweating. Yes? He's coming back in the afternoon from tending the cows. And he's covered with drops of perspiration that look like actually little pearl decorations. And he's dusty also. He's all covered with the dust from the hooves of the cows. And Mother Yasoda, when she's churning butter, she's also perspiring. When the gopis are dancing in Ras Lila, they're also perspiring. Of course, Krishna takes his hand or his cloth to wipe off the perspiration, but when he touches them, they perspire more. So it's not very effective. So what makes Vrindavan billions of times higher than Swarga? Gopakumar explains, you know, Swarga is 1,000 times more than the earth, and then the planets of the Prajapatis, 1,000 times more happiness than Swarga, and the planets of the Rishis, 1,000 times more than the Prajapatis, and the planet of Lord Brahma, 1,000 times more than the Rishis, and each covering of the universe, 1,000 times more, you know, the first covering of earth, 1,000 times more happiness than Brahmaloka, and then water, 1,000 times more happiness than earth, and finally you get to the final covering, which is billions of times more happiness than we have here on this lowest of the middle planets. But what is it that gives Vrindavan that incredible happiness? What is the essence of that happiness? What is it? If there's perspiring in dust, that would seem lower, huh? But what is the essence of their happiness that's higher and higher and higher? So here we get some idea. When Prabhupada saw how nicely Jamuna was cooking, he told her, you must teach others. He said, if you don't teach others, you'll become envious. So I pondered that. Why is that? One of my favorite quotes is in the book Bhaktyaloka. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhaktyaloka is giving a commentary on the Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instructions, text 2 and 3, which is what to do and what not to do. And his section on Niyamagraha, I feel, is one of the most wonderful. One of the most wonderful sections anywhere in any of the writings of our acharyas. And he talks about how there's different rules for people at different levels. And he says in the top level, those who are in Goloka Vrindavan, there's one to-do rule and one not-to-do rule. The to-do rule is love, is prema, and the not-to-do rule is don't envy. That's all. If you have love and you don't have envy, then you can do whatever you like. So what is the essence of this love and not envy? What is this essence of the Vrindavan mood? How is it exhibited? Let's look at the opposite. So materially, how does one enjoy? Materially, one feels there's limited resources. There's a finite amount of resources. Years ago, our farm in Hungary put on an ecological conference, and they invited some non-devotees to speak also. So there was this professor who was speaking in Hungarian, it was being translated. And he was saying, the earth has limited resources. He was really down on Americans. I wondered if I was the only American in the audience, but he was really criticizing the Americans and saying how the Americans were only 5% of the world's population and using like 50% of the world's resources. And, you know, I was kind of slinking into my seat. But he was saying there's a limited amount of resources. Therefore, he said, we shouldn't have children. Why? Because then there will be more for us. That's actually what he said. He didn't even say it like elegantly or indirectly or euphemistically. He just out and out said it. He said, there's hardly any resources. If we want to have as much resources as possible, just like those Americans, that's what he said. He said, then don't have children, because then there'll be too many people and we'll have to share. So this is the materialistic mentality. Right? Practically speaking, every child doesn't want to share. Children have to be trained to share. And they resist it. It takes years to train children to share. They don't like it. Right? They always want to get the bigger half of the cookie. You remember that when you were children? Of course, none of us were like that as children, right? But anyway. And adult society is also like that. You know, if you get a really nice car, do you want your neighbor to have as nice of a car or a little bit less? You know, our general tendency is, yeah, we want other people to have nice things, but not quite as nice as me. We want other people to be smart, but not quite as smart as me. We want other people to be good-looking, but not quite as good-looking as me. And we want other people to have money, but not quite as much as me, and so forth. And we're in competition for what we see as limited resources. And we're always in anxiety. How will I get enough for me? How will I get enough for me? Why do we share? Why do we share at all? Because we've been trained by our parents and our teachers and our society that because there are limited resources, if everybody were just to steal and to hoard, then you probably wouldn't get enough either because everybody would steal from you and hoard from you. So if you want to get enough for you, you have to do some cooperation. But the motive for cooperation, the motive for sharing, is to get more for ourselves. Like generally, when people, 99.9% of the time, when people want to marry, and a lot of people talk to me about finding a husband, finding a wife, they think about what the spouse will give them. 99.9% of the time. I mean, it is so unusual for anyone to say, I'd like a husband that I could do this kind of service for and that kind of service for and this. I don't hear that. Or I'd like a wife that I can help in this way and that way and the other way. It's, I want a wife who can do this for me, that for me, and this for me, and I want a husband who can do this for me, and that for me, and this for me. I mean, even when devotees talk about where they want to live, they almost always think about what will the place do for me. And my desires, it's very unusual for someone to say, I want to go to that place because I'm really inspired about the programs there and I want to help them. That's unusual. So our general mentality is I cooperate and I share because I'm thinking that that's a better way to get my needs met. It's going to be more efficient, more productive than if I just take. You know, if I get a reputation as a taker, nobody will want to give me anything, huh? There are some people like that. You know, have you ever met people that have a reputation as being a taker and you don't want to deal with them? So if I get a reputation as a taker, nobody want to deal with me. But if I get a reputation as a sharer, then people will be willing to give me, and then I can take. So that's the materialistic mentality. So the Vrindavan mood is exactly the opposite. So the material mood is I'm enjoying at others' expense. And in fact, jiva sajiva jivanam. That is, the whole material world is designed like that. I can only live at the cost of the lives of others, at the cost of the lives of others. Try living without killing anything. Can you do it? Can you live without killing anything? Impossible. You can't walk. You can't breathe. I mean, you can get one of those little masks, you know, but you'll still be killing something. And try to eat without ever killing anything. You know, how are you going to do that? I'll just eat apples or something, you know. Oh, but then you've deprived the seeds of the apples from the apple fruit they were going to use to nourish themselves as they were growing. I mean, you know, somehow or other. The big fish eating the little fish. But the Vrindavan, the essence of Vrindavan is the opposite. The essence of Vrindavan is explained very nicely also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Here, of course, it's explained, but sort of indirectly. But it's explained directly in Madhya Leela chapter 8. What is Madhya Leela chapter 8 about? Yes, Mahaprabhu talking to Ramananda Roy, Ramananda Roy talking to Mahaprabhu, actually, primarily. So Mahaprabhu is going higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. What is the goal of life? What is, no, that's external. That's external. That's external. Varnashram, that's external. Varnashram offered to Krishna, that's external. Sarvadharma and Prichaja, that's external. Right? Gyan Mishra Bhakti, that's external. Oh, pure Prema Bhakti. Oh, that's okay. Now go on. And finally he comes to Sakya Vatsalya Madhurya. Oh, very good. And then go on, tell me more, tell me more. And Ramananda Roy starts describing Vrindavan. And in 2.11 to 2.13, he describes what is this essence of the Vrindavan mood. So those experiencing the top ecstasy in Vrindavan, which is the top of the top of the top of the top of the top, and who's the top in Vrindavan? They are the gopis. So how do the gopis find happiness? Pleasing Krishna. And how do they try to please Krishna? Yes, yes. The gopis are thinking, oh, they're feeling. When Radharani is enjoying with Krishna, they feel, Ramananda Roy says, 100 times more happiness than when they're with Krishna themselves. So opposite to the material. Material, my happiness is at others' expense. Spiritual, my happiness is at my expense. Spiritual, I feel 100 times more happiness when others are with Krishna and I'm not. Can you imagine any Olympic champion? You know, they're running in the Olympics. I'm so happy that you got the first place and I didn't. Could you imagine that? Would anybody ever say that? Any of the second place, you know, it's really funny. In the Olympics, the second place winners are crying. Oh, why didn't I get first? But the gopis, they're saying, you go be with Krishna. 100 times more happiness when they see that Radharani is with Krishna. And then the next verse, Ramananda Roy says, and what of Radharani? Does she just say, oh yes, now I'm with Krishna? All those other gopis, they wanted me to be with Krishna. Now I'm with Krishna. I'm happy. No. How does Radharani feel? What is she doing? She's trying to push the other gopis to be with Krishna. And how much happier does Ramananda Roy say that Radharani feels when the other gopis are with Krishna? 10 million times, he says. So the gopis, he says, feel 100 times happier when Krishna's with Radharani, and Radharani feels 10 million times happier when Krishna's with the other gopis. That's the essence of Vrindavan. That is what makes Vrindavan billions and billions of times happier than the most heavenly material situation. Then beautiful palm trees and coconuts and breezes and peacocks and parrots and avocados and etc., etc. And no sweating and no dirt. Billions of times. The difference is, one is I want my happiness at your expense, and the Vrindavan happiness is my happiness is at my expense. Your happiness is my happiness. My giving to your happiness is my happiness. Material is my taking from your happiness is my happiness. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But if you look in your heart, that's what you'll see. I mean, if you really look, and if you know, of course I'm not talking to anybody here, but the materialistic people are like that. Hare Krishna. When I first came to the Krishna consciousness movement, I remember the devotees talking about materialists. And I think, yeah, those materialists. And then after a while I realize, oops, I'm the materialist. But anyway. So a materialist is thinking, is feeling, not thinking, feeling, desiring. My happiness is to take from your happiness. And the Vrindavan mood is my happiness is to give to your happiness. The natural position of the jiva is vicarious enjoyment, not direct enjoyment. And we have this example all the time, this analogy given, that how does the hand become happy by putting food in the stomach? It's indirect. It's not direct. The hand doesn't become happy. So soon we're going to have prasadam. And if you take the prasadam and just... I saw a billboard somewhere that a rich man has more fruit in his shampoo than a poor man has fruit on his plate. You know, but you're not going to get, if you just put fruit in your shampoo and you just put the fruit on your hair and you never eat any fruit, you're not going to have nice hair, huh? Not going to work. You have to eat fruit. So the happiness of the hand, of the hair, it comes indirectly. It comes vicariously. You have to give the stomach happiness, and then automatically you become happy. You're the tree. You water the root. What does this mean? It means that by nature we are vicarious enjoyers. We enjoy through others' enjoyment. Now, materially, that sounds terrible. Everything in us rebels against this concept. I enjoy through others' happiness. What's the first thing we think of when we hear that? What about me? Yes? It's our natural, like, I'll get nothing. Because if you try to imitate this, Prabhupada says here, don't imitate. If you try to imitate this, it's a failure. You cannot stay in materialistic consciousness and imitate the behavior of those in Vrindavan. You'll fall right on your face. If you stay in materialistic consciousness, that what about me, what about me, what about me, and you try to give, you'll become very angry. It just won't work. Because this is not something to do artificially. Now, how is it done? Now, by the way, we talked about Mudja 8, 2.11 and 2.12, but I didn't talk about Mudja 8, 2.13. So when Krishna sees this behavior that the gopis are pushing Radharani and Radharani is pushing the gopis, and they're each feeling 100 or 10 million times happier by doing that, Krishna feels very pleased. Now, we're like that too. I mean, any of you who have children, if you have more than one child, you're happy when your children get along nicely, and you're happy when your children work for each other's happiness. So that's even in the Bible. How wonderful it is when brothers sit together in peace. Or, of course, in the Bhagavatam, we have the story of the Prachetas. That when Lord Vishnu saw the 10 brothers getting along together and cooperating together, he was very happy. This is why, you know, we have that statement Prabhupada made to the leaders of the movement, your love for me will be shown by how well you cooperate to keep this movement going. So Krishna's very happy. That's what's attracting Krishna to the gopis. The gopis' beauty is a manifestation of their love. Just like our body is a manifestation of our material desires, as explained in chapter 13 in the Bhagavad Gita, we get a particular group of senses grouped around the mind. If you want to know what material desires really look like, look at a gross body. That's what they look like. That's the gross form of material desires. They look like hair and skin and blood and etc. That's what they look like. And spiritual desires look like a spiritual body. So when we say that Krishna is attracted by the beauty of the gopis, I mean, he's the source of all beauty. What the beauty of the gopis is simply the manifestation of their love. And love means they're caring about the other. Love means they're finding their happiness through the happiness of the other. And Krishna's also like that. Krishna's finding his happiness by the happiness of the devotees. In fact, Krishna so much wants to taste this mood of the devotee that he becomes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he's preaching. It's not that we say Krishna's the enjoyer, Bhakti Ram Yagatapasam, that he's the big taker. You know, because when I try to be the enjoyer, I come here and try to be a taker. Now I might think Krishna's just a big taker. Krishna's a big giver. He also gets happiness at seeing the devotees. He's competing with the devotees. Prabhupada tells the story of Rupa Goswami sitting in Vrindavan thinking, I'd like to invite my brother over for prasadam and cook him a nice meal. Prabhupada said, the devotees are very expert. They're good cooks. Rupa and Sanatan were very good cooks. It's one of the qualities of a devotee, Prabhupada says, that he's expert. So as he's thinking like that, this beautiful girl comes and says, oh, there was a function at our house and there's all this leftover food. Would you like some? We have all this leftover boga that we didn't use. Oh, sure. Wow. I wanted to cook for Sanatan and here it is. So he cooks this whole feast. He asks this girl, who are you? I don't remember seeing you. She said, oh, I live in the village. And then he invites Sanatan. Sanatan says, where did you get all this incredible boga? So opulent, so much, such variety. And he said, oh, this one village girl. And she said there was a function and she had all this extra ingredients. Which village girl? Oh, and Rupa Goswami starts describing this girl and he starts describing how beautiful she is. And Sanatan Goswami says, I don't remember seeing any girl that beautiful in the village. And Rupa says, I don't either. I've never seen her before. And then Sanatana Goswami looks at him and says, I don't think that was one of the village girls. That was Radharani. He said, you've taken service from Radharani. He said, you've murdered me. How dare you take service from Krishna and Radharani? And they were crying. So Prabhupada says that Krishna is competing with the devotees. The devotees are thinking, how can I please Krishna? And Krishna is thinking, how can I please the devotees? So this is the essence of preaching. Somehow or other, yukti vairagya, by any means, but without getting contaminated ourselves. Using any means, using whatever we can in Krishna's service without contaminating ourselves. In this mood. And what's interesting is that by preaching, one becomes recognized by Krishna, just like Krishna enjoys this dealings between the gopis. He says, yes, this is what I like. And by the guru. What's emphasized here, because this is the instructions of guru, is that the guru is becoming pleased when he sees this preaching of the disciples. So if we want to get recognized by Guru and Krishna, if we want them to invite us in, that's what it's all about, my dear friends. This is not a mechanical process. Mechanical processes are you're locked in prison and you find some way to manufacture a key and open the door. You find a way to dig out through the, you know, dig a hole in the wall. That's karma yoga, gyan yoga, dhyan yoga. By my own strength, by my own ability. But bhakti yoga is you act in such a way that Guru and Krishna open the door and say, come in. So what's going to have them open the door is by seeing in us the Vrindavan mood. Why will they invite us to Vrindavan? Duh. You know, if you're having a party, you want to invite people that are in the same mood as your party, yes? You don't want to invite we call in America, party pooper. Do you call them that here? Do you use that expression? Or we also call them a wet blanket. Gate crasher. Yeah, okay. So you're having a program, you're having a festival. You don't want to invite somebody who has a completely different mood. So if we want to go to Vrindavan, what is the essence of Vrindavan? The essence of Vrindavan is love by giving. Love by giving. So how do we get this love by giving? That's so many more times happier than anything heavenly that we can't even imagine. That's happier than direct contact with Krishna. I mean, we may be thinking, I'd like to see Krishna. I hope we think like that. I'd like to see Krishna like they just unveiled this George Harrison garden. You know, I really want to see you. It's just reading this in Krishna book where Akura is meditating. I really want to see Krishna. And Prabhupada's talking about this is the perfection, to see Krishna, to have him put his hand on you like Prahlad Maharaj. We're reading here how the Singhadev put his hand on the head of Prahlad. Immediately Prahlad's freed from all contamination and ecstasy to see the Lord's lotus feet, and touch his hand and smell him, etc. 10 million times happier than that. 10 million times happier than that. More than that. So how do we get that? Well, interestingly, we get it through preaching. Even if we start off being selfish, taker, materialistic demons, by preaching, we attract the attention of Guru and Krishna. If we just accept this theoretically and say, oh, okay, I'm not sure if I really like that idea of happiness by giving, but it sounds like it might be nice. I'll give it a try. I'll give it a go, or as you guys say. And we, if you say that to someone in America, they look at you and say, I'll give it a go. And they're like, what? So I'll give it a go. Let me try it. Let me preach through my happiness, through my lifestyle. Through the books, through prasadam, through paintings and pictures, through the holy name, through direct instruction, upadeshi. And then Guru says yes, and Krishna says yes. And when they're pleased, Vidyantastha bhajani vidyunati suritsada, the heart becomes cleaned, and we gradually see who we are. Chaito darpana marjana, we see who we are. We start to see Jivara Swarupaya Krishna Nityadasha. I am actually a giver. I am of this essence of Vrindavan. One starts to see that and starts to start relishing in a different way. And then as one starts relishing in that different way, when one starts actually relishing the happiness of others, Prabhupada would say, I want to see my disciples becoming more advanced than me. When one starts meditating like that, I take joy in seeing others being more Krishna conscious than I am. Then one's desire to preach is no longer theoretical. It's no longer that, well, okay, what I'm supposed to do, and so I'll do it. Then one's desire to preach becomes that you can't contain what you have. It's like the day I left Venice, the town president and his wife invited me to their home for prasadam. As we were driving to the airport, we stopped at their home for prasadam. And of course, it's Italy, so they made pizza, of course. And they made little pizzas, like this big, about a foot in diameter. How many pizzas did they make? They must have made at least 15 or 20 pizzas. It was just four of us. So you have so many pizzas, you can't eat all of them. I said, you're going to have to do the traditional householder thing and go out on the road. And anyone who's hungry, you know. And plus they had stuffed zucchinis and cake and salad and so many things. It wasn't even just pizza. So when you, by preaching, when you start to get the favor of Guru and Krishna and you cleanse the heart and you start seeing your real nature, then you start having happiness that's so many thousands and millions of times more than taking happiness. And you start experiencing pratyaksha bhagamam dharmam susukham. You start experiencing susukham. Please, we have to do this. Parandrisra nivartate. If you just stay theoretically licking the outside of the jar of honey and talking about the honey and looking at the honey in the jar, after a while you'll go look for honey someplace else. So when by preaching one experiences this, and when one experiences this, one realizes one has a lot more pizza than one can eat. You realize Krishna's invited me to a party and he made too much pizza. You know, they were begging us, please eat, eat. I said, I can't eat anymore. One time when I was leaving India going somewhere, I can't remember. Actually, the devotee is here, but he's not here. So I was staying at the home of an Indian family. And as always, when you stay at the home of Indian families, they give you too much to eat. It's like their regulative principle. You know, so I'm preparing to go and they're preparing prasadam for my journey and they prepared a bag like this big shopping bag. I said, I cannot possibly eat this. And I couldn't give it back. Generally, you can go through it and give back parts of it to people, although they don't like that, but usually they'll tolerate it. But this family would not tolerate it. They said, you are taking the bag. Like, what am I going to do with this bag of prasadam? And I had a long, long, long journey, and I thought, you know, it's going to rot, and what am I going to do? There's no creatures in the airport. You can't, like, put it out on the ground in the compost pile of the airport. You know, you have to throw it away, and it's offensive to prasadam, and I just didn't know what to do. And then I ran into a devotee at one of my stopovers. As I said, he's visiting this temple now, although he's not here, that devotee. Anyway, I ran into him in a stopover. And he says, oh, Urmila, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Prabhu. He says, do you have any prasadam? I was like, yes. Thank you, Krishna, you know. He said, now I know why you gave me so much prasadam. So as you're preaching and you start experiencing the happiness of giving, the happiness of vicarious enjoyment, you've got so much prasadam in your bag, you cannot eat all of it. Mahaprabhu talked about this, in fact, in Varanasi. He said, I brought all this love of God here, and it's this heavy burden, and I don't want to carry it back with me. But nobody here is willing to pay the price. You know that, right? He said that. He said, nobody here is willing to pay for it. So we'll just give it away. So gradually the devotee's preaching becomes, which is what's discussed in this verse, the outpouring of their own happiness. Now, of course, as the devotee starts feeling their own uncontained, uncontainable, overflowing, cup runneth over happiness, and they start preaching from that platform, well, guess who gets really pleased? Krishna and Guru. They get even more pleased. And then you get even more inner realization and you realize your nature even more. And then you get more pizza in your bag. And then you want to preach even more, and on and on and on it goes until one is experiencing this essence of Vrindavan even while apparently walking around in one of these blood, muscle, skin, hair contraptions. That one is then experiencing being in Vrindavan even here, and practically there's no difference then here or there. There's no here there. And then we're fully invited. The door is fully opened. Yes, you are. In fact, there isn't even practically speaking a door. One is just already there. So this is the essence of Vrindavan, that we find our own happiness by giving happiness to others. vicarious enjoyment, enjoying through the enjoyment of others, enjoying through the enjoyment of Krishna with his devotees and the devotees with Krishna, and wanting to bring as many devotees to Krishna as possible. This essence of Vrindavan is decidedly repulsive to a materialistic person. A materialistic person feels revulsion and fear and terror at the concept of vicarious happiness, at the concept of being happy by giving to others, because artificially it cannot be done. It cannot be done in materialistic consciousness. It will not work. Therefore, their experience of playing with this thing is very bitter for them. But if one does this in Krishna consciousness, then one finds that indeed it's wonderful, and then happiness by taking becomes revulsive and fearful. That one just thinks, well, why would I want to be a taker? One looks at it and it becomes disgusting. So, my dear child, continue dancing, chanting, and performing Sankirtan in association with devotees. Furthermore, go out and preach the value of chanting Krishna Nama, for by this process, you'll be able to deliver all fallen souls. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements, etc.